truth and the life. It amazes me that in 21st century Western Europe, we get so worried about stuff. That was part of the reason about doing the children's talk today. We worry, don't we, about money, we worry about children, we worry about finding a spouse, we worry about our identity, what we eat, what we drink, how many of the five a day we have, how many steps we walk each day, parental responsibilities. If we are a child to elderly parents and we worry about them, we worry about the state of the world, the environment. Our choices are also always mixed with guilt, it seems. Who would know that diesel cars, which were once touted as clean, have now been discovered to be huge polluters of our environment? We spend much more than average on a property in a nice place, in a nice middle-class town or village, and then we feel guilty that our children are not growing up in a multicultural situation. We learn that in so many ways we cannot have our cake and eat it, and yet we continue to try to do just that. Anxiety is a huge issue for many people living in the UK. Children now and adults struggle with anxiety, and yet life, it seems, is so much better than it used to be. When I was a child, we as a family, my dad worked for a charity, so he wasn't paid very well. In those days, if you worked for a charity, you got paid a lot less than anybody else. There was four of us children, and we often run short of money. And towards the end of the month, my mum used to forge signatures, my dad's signatures, on his cheques, and went out and cashed them. And I was often sent to the local grocer to ask for things on tick to pay back when the money came in. In this developing world, the stereotypical exclamation of first world visitors is that there is so much more joy and enjoyment in life in those in the developing world, those on the street, those who have nothing. Just recently, Fee and I have watched Freddie Flintoff take a group of ne'er-do-wells from Lancashire and take them to Calcutta in India. So obviously it's a place that I've been to four or five times now. And what obviously it benefited them hugely, but was hugely challenging as well to see so many different issues that we don't necessarily see in our world around us. Why is this then? Why are we so anxious and depressed at times? Why is it that the more we have, the more anxious we become? There is the simple answer that we have so much more. We have so much more than to lose through flood, fire, theft, all the rest of it. But I feel that it goes deeper than that. We have been taught through advertising that we always need to get something more. Our lives wouldn't be complete without the iPhone, whatever it is, 14 now, and the rest of it, brand new cars, all the rest of the things that we need to have to feel satisfaction in life. Our aspirations, we've been taught then, is materialism is where it's at, and the real security is in such things as that. I remember as a child, and my parents had very little, but when they invited people round from the church that were church leaders, I would sit there as a child and be amazed that they talked about monetary wealth all the time. They talked about what cars they were getting and the bigger house that they were getting, rather than about God and about spiritual things. Materialism does not bring us security. In fact, the reverse is true. When we go for searching for security in materialism, when our real rock is Jesus Christ, we realise that there are gaping holes in this particular form of idolatry. Slide two, please. Next eight. The Lord is my rock. So when first world people like us, what we do nowadays is to dabble in spirituality, the bits they like, such as yoga, meditation, New Age rites, whilst conveniently ignoring the unacceptable bits, the call to morality, the challenge of suffering as a good thing, the following after the wounded victim, which is Christ. So in the last few weeks, or the last few months, we've been looking at who Jesus is. And who he said he is a very important part of that. What did Jesus claim to be? Well, we've made clear that Jesus claimed to be God. He used the statement, I am, regularly. That was the statement that Yahweh used in the Old Testament to identify himself as God. And today we're really studying three I ams in one. So Thomas, remember him? So-called doubting Thomas. I loved him because he's like the one that asks the questions. You need in any group somebody who's going to ask the questions. Otherwise, you're all sitting there going, yeah, I'm not going to ask those questions. You need somebody to ask those questions. So Thomas asked, how do we know the way? Really big question, isn't it? And Jesus replied, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So Jesus is all embracing the totality of all that we need in our search for security. We don't need to run both ways. We don't need to enjoy the materialism of this life and reaching out for it and making an idol of it, as well as seeking to serve Jesus. Only in Jesus Christ and in our full embrace of his totality can we know freedom from cares, anxieties, doubts, fears, and emptiness. I used to love watching Louis Theroux on the television. I've kind of gone off him a bit more recently. But I was watching a few years ago a documentary by him on drug addiction in the States, a huge, big problem. And someone he interviewed as a recovering addict declared that only by finding God could any addict fill the space, the emptiness that is left by the drugs. Russell Brand, we've heard lots about him recently, but he's a recovering addict of many things, and once he was a celebrity atheist. He declared, next slide please, as long as we prioritise material truths over spiritual truths, we will live in tyranny because we're living an illusion. So Jesus is a complete story, the be-all and end-all, the entire revelation of God to the world. Next slide, please. Paul in Colossians writes, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him. So once we know Jesus, we know all that there is to know about God. In one sense, when we turn to Jesus and become his child, we have fulfilled all that is necessary. But in another sense, we're called to continue to follow him throughout our lives. So I love that choice of Ned's as the first song, because it shows that our commitment to God goes on right through our lives. It's not one-off decision and then carry on as if you've never heard of him. It's a pilgrimage. It's a long journey right through our lives. So that commitment is to follow Jesus. A huge question for us all, me included, is, how much does your well-being and your life depend on Christ and your relationship with him? Or maybe you've hedged your bets through financial securities. We're all going to die. That's absolutely certain. 100% of everybody that's ever lived has died. And for some of us, what we have in terms of our sense of identity and security will be stripped away long before that. So it may seem academic to you at present. You're living the great, healthy life. Wonderful. Enjoy it. Thank God for it. But from one who was young, and is now reaching the foothills, I hope, of old age, your life will pass as if it was a mirage. And if you do not have Christ now and keep hold of him, you will discover yourself lost, living a lie, and dying inside and out. A few years ago, Fi and I went to Northern Ireland. Anybody else been to Northern Ireland for holiday? Yeah, a few. Great. It's obviously still had then the marks of the troubles around, but it's a beautiful country. But one of the things that took us back were the Bible passages that were writ large in town areas, challenging the reader to repent, or otherwise they would be condemned to hell. Things, the lake of fire, one message declared. I really feel that these passages are not the best way to encourage people to go to church and to find Jesus. Jesus said, I've come to bring you good news. The gospel is good news. I believe that God's mercy is far wider than many of us sense of what it should be, but we cannot presume upon it. James the Apostle wrote in his very straightforward manner, next slide please, Aid. Sorry, it looked good at home, but it's a bit harder to read. It says, you don't have what you want because you don't ask God. When you do ask for something, you don't receive it. That's because you ask for the wrong reason. You want to spend your money on sinful pleasures. So what are our motives in following Christ? Is it, as I asked a few months ago, is it transactional? Is it what we can get out of following Jesus? Or are we prepared to go all the way? So next slide, please. So Jesus, how is it that Jesus is the way? Well, again, we were on holiday in Northern Ireland. The Irish, as we know, are very friendly people. And we were having a meal in Belfast on the third floor of this shopping centre. And afterwards, after we'd finished, the waiter came and took the plates, and we asked him how we could get to the Titanic experience. Anybody been to the Titanic? Yeah, it's very, very well worth going. I'd recommend that. And that's in the docks area of Belfast. But he didn't just say, oh, yeah, I don't know, or, yeah, just go down here and go down there and go down there. He actually took us out of the shopping centre. So he went down all the floors with us. He took us out of the shopping centre, and he pointed it to us because we could see it from outside the shopping centre. You can see it. And he said, there it is. And that's what I call a lovely guide, because me, if somebody says you go left and turn second right, third left, I'm hopeless. I'll never get there. So Jesus didn't just identify the way we should go. He guides us every day. If we walk close behind him, if we get covered by the dust that he sticks up when he's walking, his feet kick up, which was the aim of all followers of rabbis, we cannot go wrong. Not even of those of us who have no sense of direction can get lost. Jesus is not only the compass, he is the map. So next slide, please. Jesus is the truth. Now, we've had lots of stuff going on about what is truth, haven't we? People say this is a post-truth world. We don't really know what that means, let alone what is the truth. No one has embodied the truth apart from Jesus. So how can he declare this? Why does he claim it? Firstly, not only that the statement of moral perfection finds its peak in him, but more importantly, the fact of moral perfection finds its realization in him. So our ideas of truth stem from the way Jesus lived and what he said. I'm presently mentoring a young man who is heading for church leadership. And one of the things I've emphasized with him is that so often other Christians tell us what they think we want to hear, and we hear what we want to hear. That is, somebody presents their best face to me and makes out that the life is good, and then I think, oh, great, that's wonderful. I can be happy for that person and go off, even if they are deeply struggling inside. God's voice often runs counter to what we believe about others and also what we believe about ourselves. One of the ways that we can tell God's voice, God's guidance, is that it often says the things that we're least expecting to hear. And there are many examples of these in the dealings of Jesus with those he met. One such was in the way he spoke to the rich young ruler. So you remember that man approached him, and he had everything going for him. He had riches, which in those days were seen in the first century Judean, were seen as a blessing, as God pouring his blessing upon you. He also said that he obeyed all the commandments. Wonderful, wow. You know, how many of us can say that? I'm definitely not me. He's thinking, great, you know, and he asked Jesus, what do I need to do to get into heaven? And so he expected encouragement and congratulation, and he went away frustrated and broken. Jesus spoke the truth to him. Even as with the rich young ruler, he had great compassion for him. So we read, looking at the rich young ruler, Jesus felt genuine love for him. There is still one thing you haven't done, he told him. Go and sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. I must emphasize that is specific to the rich young ruler, specific to that man at the time. It's not necessarily a call for all of us to go and sell everything that we have, because we'll all be destitute and relying on other people. So this is a particular thing, because I've had good people say, well, I'm going to go and sell everything now. And I think, okay. and try to prevent them from doing it, because this is a specific call. So God calls us sometimes to the very thing that we think is a blessing to us. He goes and calls us to go some other route. What truth is Jesus speaking into your life? Are you so committed to retaining your public persona that you disregard his warnings and admonitions? The love of Jesus for you does not prevent him telling you the truth. And then thirdly, Jesus as the life. Next slide, please. Thank you. The irony of these words, as we know in hindsight, is Jesus is just a few hours, maybe a day away from dying on the cross. However, this is why we know that he spoke the truth, that he is the life. His victory over death proved it once for all. We return to the words I said earlier, that in finding Jesus, we find our all in all. There's no sense of this being anything less than unequivocal. The man who lived to be a servant for all is the one who can declare himself to be the way and the truth and the life, and not be called a liar. Look at his life as recorded in the four Gospels, and fall on your knees in adoration. The words of Thomas, next slide please, Aid. Thomas said, well, unless I put my hand in the side of the resurrected Jesus and touch the marks in his hand, then I'm not going to believe. I need concrete proof, he said. And then Jesus appears to Thomas and says, well, feel my side, look at my hands and see. And Thomas' response was, my Lord and my God. Is that your response to the risen Jesus at work in your life? Amen. So we're going to sing now with a prayer, You Fed the Hungry. I'm not sure how familiar this is, but it's a very singable song. And it's beautiful words. It really sums up.